This is On Target, a look at politics, crime, education, what's happening in Newfoundland and Labrador with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. And now your On Target host, Linda Swain.
There's no doubt about it. Winter is coming early. Look at it out there. Oh my goodness gracious. And we're supposed to get some half-decent accumulations in the St. John's area. Kind of strange for late November. I remember the last time we had significant snow in November, dare I say it. It was, 2001? That was the year we had those record snowfalls. Driving up Kenmount Road was like driving through a tunnel. Anyway, let's divert away from that. Well, a gathering was held in the capital city earlier this month to discuss seal management and the impact of seal populations on East Coast fish stocks. News out of the summit has been slowly filtering out through industry representatives who participated in the event. I don't want to flog a dead horse here, but media weren't allowed to attend. We just got some opening remarks and some closing remarks, and that was it. So the news that we've been getting has been sort of, you know, filtering down in dribs and drabs. From what we understand, among the discussions made at the summit, according to processor Dion Dakins of Carino Processing, was the decision to commission third-party science on the impact of seals in the environment. There have long been calls, of course, for improved science to determine the exact impact of seals on a number of commercial fisheries. Well, my guest today is the managing director of the Canadian Centre for Fisheries Innovation, Keith Hutchings. Hello.
Hello, Linda. How are you doing today?
Great. And yourself?
Doing very good, thank you.
So you attended the SEAL Summit, is that correct?
Yes, I did, yep.
So what was discussed there?
I guess the impetus for the SEAL Summit came out of the recommendations of the report, Atlantic SEAL Science Task Force, which was called by the Minister of DFO earlier in the year, basically to look at many factors related to the operation of the seal industry and, particularly related to science, related to the information that's obtained by DFO and the interaction with industry and, all the discussions that's been had over the past number of years in regards to the growth of not only the harp seal population, but certainly the gray seal population in the Gulf and on the South Coast and other seal species and the overall effect they're having on the ecosystem in general and certainly on specific fish stocks like cod, which, as we know, we've had a moratorium since 1992, northern cod, and haven't seen a lot of success in return. We've seen some success in terms of the recovery, but not to the extent we would have liked to see, and thus the impact that's having on, the commercial increase of that resource and what it means to this province and others as well in regards to the commercial activity. The positive thing, there was many stakeholders at the table. Everybody was heard. Science was there from DFO. And I think there was a wholesome and full discussion about the challenges we face in regards to seal populations, where they're going. And I do believe there was some recognition from DFO that it's time, and certainly one of the recommendations they made, that seal predation would be included in projections for various species in regards to a management plan and, how that affects, how that predation is affecting various fish species.
So what do we currently know about the seal population? And to be clear, and you said to seal populations is because we have, five or six different species, all of which predate on different types of creatures out there. So what do we know about those seal populations and the impact they're having?
Well, if we go back and look at, gray seal populations in the 1960s, we were at about roughly 15,000, seals. You look at today, that number has grown dramatically. Up, some speculate, 500,000 or even more. You look at harp seals in the early 70s, a couple of million seals. Now you're looking at a population in 2019, somewhere around 7.6 million. When you look at the amount of, northern cod that's taken from a commercial perspective and look at the amount that's taken from predation, I mean, you're looking at oftentimes 7, 8, 9 more cod is taken in predation that would be taken, you know, from a very small commercial fishery that exists today. So, you know, that's extremely telling in terms of the amount of, that's been taken from the ecosystem. And I guess overall, too, when you talk about ecosystem, it's about the fact that, the increased populations are having, to a larger extent, to a whole range of other species and interconnection of those species, you know, whether it's a food source, predation on something like capelin and the role that plays in rebuilding the cod stocks, predation of shrimp or young crab, again, how that relates to the overall ecosystems, and a variety of species that are affected by that. In the Gulf and with the gray seals, there has been science that's been completed by DFO, and they have recognized that indeed gray seals are having an impact on ground stocks, and they are having a direct effect based on the predation and based on the amount that's been taken. And I think that was, that conclusion was drawn from a more comprehensive, annual and multi-year evaluation of the eating habits and what they were taking over a longer period of time. Because I guess the point is that, if take the harp seal, and they're in very regions off the province of, or in the Atlantic at different times of the year, they're at various times at various areas they're in for particular reasons because they migrate as well. They're interacting with different species of fish at various times in the calendar year. So, their diet is not consistent. So obviously they're eating various species at various times during the year. But if you're only sampling things like stomach content at a particular time in the year, you're not getting a true picture of what their overall diet is and what exactly they're taking and the volume they're taking. So I think going forward, that's where we need to get to. As I said, the forum was a great discussion on elements of that. But if we're going to get there, I'm hopeful we will, that we'll do that science and recognition. But I guess we'll see how that unfolds in the months and years ahead.
And I suppose when you look at the different populations as well, their impact would be determined to a certain extent on population, but also on their general size. I mean, you could have a harbor seal or a ring seal and their impact on things. And then you have a gray seal, which is a very massive animal. So you don't need to have very many of them to have an impact.
Yeah, exactly. And, it's a great point you make. And then it's an understanding of the growth of those herds. There is some discussion, too, as well, and scientific evidence that the gray seal herd, because of its expansion off the herd, it's creating new colonies of gray seal. That means, there's extended growth in various regions for that species as well. And if you look at, people around Newfoundland and Labrador know that if you look at, the Codroy Valley, you look at various rivers, there's evidence in estuaries, about the, whether you call them harbor seals, whether you call them some other species, that they exist in places that we've never seen them before. So from my own experience, I do a little bit of salmon fishing in Renews River and Southern Shore. And in the estuary there during the year, you can see seals there pretty well any time of the year. So, there's a big run of brown trout that goes through. There's obviously run of Atlantic salmon. There's runs of other species. So if they're in their estuaries, how much are they taking? And that's probably the same. A harbor seal could be a harp seal, but I mean the various species and the times of the years and the various locations and the new areas they're showing up. I mean, what species are they taking and how much are they taking and what effect does that have? And those types of areas related to, salmon rivers, Atlantic salmon has been a moratorium for quite some time. And again, we have not seen the recovery that you would expect. So the question becomes, again, what effect would seals be having in these estuaries related to, migrating in and out of Atlantic salmon and interrupting, their chain of development when you have seals present in estuaries like that.
And I want to talk to you about your potential role in all of this when we come back after the break. Our guest today on Target is Managing Director of the Canadian Centre for Fisheries Innovation, Keith Hutchings. We'll be back right after this.
Save the date. VOCM's Dial a Carol. Sunday, November 27th, 1 to 6 p.m. on your VOCM.
And our guest today on Target is Keith Hutchings, Managing Director of the Canadian Centre for Fisheries Innovation. And we were talking a little bit about the SEALS Summit, which, Keith, you attended. And, of course, you were a former provincial fisheries minister. Did you encounter a reluctance to address the SEAL issue when you were in cabinet?
I guess that, you know, what would we say? It's a difficult situation because you're dealing with, I guess, a tide of environmental groups and others that have been very active in the province over the years, and, you know, got to the point of basically, you know, stopping the harvesting of harp seals, basically on misinformation to proceed with it and support it. But there was always that fear, you know, somewhat. But I think from my experience of sitting around a cabinet table, there was always, steadfast that we'd support the industry and try and develop markets to allow the harvest or total output catch to be taken each year. And in all my time in government, we did a lot related to promoting markets, putting funding into markets, trying to develop those markets. And I do remember distinctly, I think it was in 2013 or 2014 as minister, we were looking at a export certificate into China, which is seen as one of the largest markets and one of the largest opportunities, as well as some of the presentations at the SEALS Summit was related to Japan as well. But back at that time, there was an understanding that I think that we thought we would have got that certificate to export, you know, various attributes from seal production, whether it's seal oil probably being the biggest, that we would get it into Japan. And it got very close, but it never did materialize for, I think, a number of reasons. And to date, we're still not there. So, you know, there are challenges, but I think collectively the province has always, I think, for the most part, been supportive of programs and services in the industry to identify ways to get that product into market and to refocus a little bit, because originally, I guess, the origin was about, about the skins and getting those into market. But I think as innovation, technology, and certainly work Carino has done, I know officials there, Dion was on a while ago speaking to it, they've done innovation and they have, invested heavily in being able to develop and, propose new opportunities for the products related to SEAL. But one of the biggest challenges we have, I think, is the markets and continuing to look to get access to markets and maybe reallocating the markets that we're going to. And with that comes as well additional facets of, you know, the products from the SEAL and how we utilize as much of the SEAL as possible. And that could attract us to various other markets as well.
You mentioned Japan and China, and I know that previously one of our biggest markets was Russia, and of course, well, that's out of the picture now, but they also wouldn't allow us to fly over or transship through Europe to get to Russia. So that was part of the problem there. So can we establish these markets in China and Japan if there is a demand?
Well, you know, from my experience and from what I, you know, people I speak to that are into the business, and, you know, we heard at the summit from some indigenous groups as well from across the country, both in the north and on the east coast, and some of the challenges they've had and some of the efforts they've had. But I think it is available. You know, what's coming from, SEAL and the products is very consistent which what is needed from, you know, healthy foods, healthy nutraceuticals, other means that we can use the SEAL products from, whether that's oil, whether that's, you know, from the high iron content in blood and iron supplements. And, you know, you look at things like the absorption rate of those that come from come from seals is far greater than anything you could buy off a shelf today. I think we need to elevate the discussion to talk about two things. One is the effect that the seal populations have on the ecosystem, which is a much larger issue, and how do we deal with that? Second to it is, how do we take the total allowable catch and the amount that's required every year to be taken? Because I think in the last 5 years, we've probably only taken harp seals, a very small number of what roughly annually is about a $450,000 total allowable catch. So, how do we have those markets develop? How do we have the attributes that we take from the sealed product available to go into markets? And how do we continue to grow those markets to do it? You know, even if you just say, well, you know, we don't agree with taking seals, but the other issue is, what's the effect on the ecosystem, and how can we continue on as we are today? Like, are we looking at an ecosystem disaster coming up in terms of groundfish stocks and other stocks if we don't deal with it? So those are really big questions that, I think we're starting having discussions on. But to your question, yes, I think from what I hear from those that are involved in the industry and in the markets, but we need a focused vision and a focused strategic plan as Canadians, and certainly from a Canadian government that's willing to take this on as a priority for multiple reasons why it should be taken on.
And I would suggest that expanding markets and selling product to those markets is far more palatable than a cull.
Yes, exactly. So, conceivably, who knows? And nobody's somebody going to say at some point, because of the ecosystem, the damage that's happening, we're going to have a cull. I would say probably not. But if you can, one of the interesting things at the summit, we had a discussion about seal meat and about the availability of seal meat, in Canadian restaurants. It may be sporadically available here and there, but one of the indigenous groups spoke to the fact that they came here to Newfoundland, and seal meat is not on the menu anywhere, but yet we talk about trying to export seal meat as a product to be put on the menus around the world and so forth. But I think we need to look at that as well and say, how do we start here and develop products from seal meat that even 20% or 30% of the population are take on as a food source. How do we grow it here? And then how do we, expand that out? At the reception, again, at Seal Summit, Todd Perrin, recognized chef, obviously here in the province, well recognized, he had prepared some dishes in regards to seal meat, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. But again, not everybody may, but if you can get, 20 or 30% of the population to enjoy it, you're evolving the whole menu of how seal meat is prepared, how it can be prepared. I spoke to a gentleman the other day that is in MI. He's from India, and he's doing courses here, and I spoke to him about a couple of things. But, I just said to him about seal meat, and he wasn't aware of it, but, he said, you have to market it, you have to align it with the current cultural habits of a country or of a region, and then incorporated that into various meal types and how it is consumed. So I think there's a lot of work to be done on that side, but I think it's interesting what came out of the Seal Summit is that we should start at home as well, and certainly invite or make Canadians aware of seal meat and the opportunities as well.
Every spring of the year, I got to be honest, I have a little craving for my Nan's seal flipper pie, and she's gone many years now, and I don't suppose I'll ever have anything like it again, but wow, was it ever good. And I was never a big fan of seal meat. It's an acquired taste, I would imagine, but the way that she prepared it in the seal flipper pie, oh my goodness, it was really good. What about matters of affordability? Because seal products are widely available here in Newfoundland and Labrador, but they're not always in people can't always afford that lovely pair of boots or a jacket or whatever the case may be. Are we looking at that? They tend to be high-end products, but if they were more readily available for everybody to purchase, would it be easier to handle it that way?
Yeah, so that'd be one side of, I guess, the products in terms of seal skins and what's developed from that. Again, that's driven by, I guess, market and you know, what the market source is for those products. And I think that ebbs and flows a little bit, certainly domestically and internationally, depending on the markets and, you know, what promotions are ongoing in any particular time on both sides of the issue. But I think our real growth is related to the other byproducts that I've sort of mentioned that are involved with seal and seal production, and how, you know, you use those to increase value, greater utilization of the resource, to make sure that, you know, we can get to the point where, you know, harvesters that are commercially involved in harvesting, there's a value to them and an incentive for them to go and actually harvest seals and get a return, because they're business people too, get a return on their time and energy and fuel and labor and all those other things, to get a return on that. So, you know, we can take those total allowable catch, for example, for harp seals every year, and to make sure from that perspective, it's commercially viable. It's an income, it's a return to those, additional income for those that are fish harvesters. And then we're also doing what we need to do for resource management from an ecosystem point of view, of taking out a certain amount of animals or a certain amount of seals every year from the resource management point of view.
Now, we didn't talk about CCFI's role in all of this, so when we come back, I'll get into that part of things. Our guest today on Target is Keith Hutchings, Managing Director of the Canadian Centre for Fisheries Innovation. We'll be back right after this.
Join us for On Target, 1 hour in which Linda Swain examines topics that mean the most to you. On Target, weekday afternoons at 1 on your VOCM.
Our guest is the Managing Director of the Canadian Centre for Fisheries Innovation, Keith Hutchings. And Keith, Dion Dakins mentioned on Open Line not too long ago that government seems to be acknowledging the role of the importance of third-party science. And this is where I guess you come into the conversation, the Canadian Centre for Fisheries Innovation. What kind of a role can it play in terms of this third-party science?
Yeah, I think, CCFI's been around for 30 years, Linda, and certainly amassed a lot of knowledge, connections, and, you know, relationships, and, you know, has been involved with industry, whether that's, you know, harvesting side, processing side, and off, obviously on the farming side, aquaculture. So there's a lot of intel, a lot of information, a lot of relationships that have been built. I think that would be very supportive of playing a role of being that third party, you know, entity that could lead, you know, science and development, certainly look at product development and other areas of the requirements that we look at this coming out of the SEAL Summit, and certainly looking at the Atlantic SEAL Science Task Force. CCFI also was part of the province's Fisheries Advisory Council that was set up by the current provincial government to look at various aspects of the fishing industry, and you know, we're playing a role there as well. So with that knowledge and expertise and you know, ability and being that third party, it gives us, the access and the flexibility to do various pieces of work. And, you know, as CCFI, we answer to an industry board and also some academic folks as well that sit on our board. But we're a unique conduit between the industry and academia, whether that's Memorial University, whether that's other institutions here or elsewhere, that we can partner with to do various pieces of work or pieces of research and development or technology adaptation. Or in this particular case, particularly with SEAL product development and you know, again, we use the expertise and knowledge at places like Memorial and Marine Institute here. At the summit, Dr. Heather Burke spoke and gave, you know, some insight. She heads up the Center for Aquaculture and Seafood Development at the Fisheries Marine Institute here. And, you know, some work has been done. There's been a lot of work actually done in regards to seal product development, you know, and all that is there. We've certainly, CCFI has partnered on some of that. So, you know, certainly we see ourselves as that conduit going forward that can meet with all the players, that can arrange and seek out that expertise and knowledge that's required to fulfill some of the call for proposals that's gone out from DFO, and then also be that non-biased or third-party communicator of that information. You know, in the past, there's been a lot of challenges in regards to you know, the communications of data from DFO, the understanding of it from industry, able to engage with all the, you know, fabulous knowledge and expertise that's out there from the harvesting and those that have been involved in the industry for decades. You know, I spoke to some folks, Keith Bath, who's known in terms of being around the industry for decades. You know, where's all that knowledge and expertise, and how is it brought in and considered along with the official scientific data, and how all that is used in terms of bringing issues like predation into stock predictions and resource management moving forward? So, you know, from CCSI perspective, you know, we really think we can play a role. And, you know, we're certainly appreciative of the minister putting out the call for proposal, and we'll certainly work with the academic institutions here or elsewhere to answer that call.
So any idea what exactly needs to be learned here, what the focus might be?
Some of the items that were identified related to certainly the abundance and distribution of various fish populations, and, you know, how that data, some of that data would be there, how that would be examined, how we'd look at collection of new data. You know, that certainly could be done through those that are in the industry and collecting their experience and knowledge and catch rates various times during the year and all those types of things. Certainly, as well, there was mention in the call for proposals, looking at understanding what I talked about before, the marine ecosystem, to better, you know, incorporate things like environmental considerations in stock assessments. You know, how do we look at predation, but the ecosystem as well. So, you know, with various climate change elements being introduced over the past number of years, you know, the migratory patterns of various fish species have changed. You know, the migratory patterns of seals in terms of the availability of ice and where they pup now and at what time of the year. So all of that needs to be integrated and get a clearer picture of what truly is the situation today. And without that, and without doing over, I think, a multi-year period with multi-species, because obviously seals, there's a number of species that are predating, that has predation on various fish stocks. So we need a better understanding. And it's a big ocean, and, you know, a lot is happening out there, but, you know, we need that focus. And I think, you know, this is a step in the right direction. You know, at the end of the day, where does it get us? We'll wait and see, but I think it's a step in the right direction.
So no doubt you're putting in a call for, you're answering that call for proposals. When do you expect to hear something further?
I think the end of December is the deadline, and I think all projects, I think, are, if I remember correctly, are wanting to start in April, I think, of 2023. April 1st, I do believe. So that will be, you know, a step to move forward. I know since coming on here, we had discussions with, and I have to say, you know, CCFI works closely with DFO. You know, we have a relationship with DFO. We do, through the Atlantic Fisheries Fund, we do an array of projects. We have other projects that we do with them, or I guess a service delivery model where they have funding, we apply from, and we'll contact industry and do an array of projects. So, you know, we work with them as regulators as well as their scientific community and their resource management community. So all of that is, you know, is that relationships are built there as well. I will mention that on the morning before the SEAL Summit started, Minister Murray did visit with us, with myself and the chair of CCFI, Alberta Wareham, and went through what CCFI does, and certainly with the officials here at MI, they met and went through some of the things they've done in the past related to SEAL and some of the opportunities, and just a good understanding of the valued expertise and knowledge that exists here at the Marine Institute and what they could offer.
Our guest today on Target is Keith Hutchings, Managing Director of the Canadian Centre for Fisheries Innovation. And I know you're working on a number of other interesting projects, and I want to ask you about those when we come back after the break, right after this.
Weekday mornings from 5:30 to 9, jumpstart your day with Jerry Lynn Mackey and Ben Murphy. Newsmakers, traffic, weather, and more during your VOCM morning show.
Our guest today is Managing Director of the Canadian Centre for Fisheries Innovation, Keith Hutchings. And Keith, of course, we've been Following the sad story of the plight of the right whales in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, gladly we've seen a few more right whale sightings in and off the coast of Newfoundland. But be that as it may, that's where they spent most of their time feeding, and that in the Gulf of St. Lawrence, and being surface feeders, they're prone to boat strikes and problems with entanglement and gear. What kind of a role is CCFI playing there? What are you guys doing?
Yeah, we have, I think, about 22 projects now underway, either in the early stages or, you know, cluing up. One of them we have, and maybe I'll first say that, you know, there's a variety in the aquaculture, harvesting and processing sector. You know, it could be anywhere from, possibly avoiding a bycatch in regards to altering gear. We have artificial intelligence related to species modeling in terms of multi-year data and multi-zone data, and how you use artificial intelligence to build a predictive model for future resource management. We have projects related to seaweed and possible production here in the province and development of that. That came out of a discussion we had a number of months ago, too, I think, Linda, related to the Laurentic Forum and how we had a seaweed symposium. And, the industry is about, if I remember correctly, about $2 billion, and most of that product now is coming from Asia. So there is a push in, we'd say, the North Atlantic regions to build that, because some of the environment that's available is pristine related to various kelps availability and for the production of it. So there's a lot of excitement happening in that area. In related to your question on right whales, we were involved with a project with two private companies, Assured out of Bedford, Nova Scotia. They developed what's called rope on command technology, and as well working with a local company here, eSonar, that looks at fishing with ropeless gear. Now, you mentioned right whales, and there's always, speaking to harvesters and speaking to the industry, I know in the Gulf this originated in regards to a number of years ago, and some instances have happened, but there's always a discussion about the amount of right whales that, you know, that are in the area here and along our coast, and, you know, is it really an issue? I guess from our perspective, there was a call for proposals, and we were successful in the first time. Actually, Rope on Command has been a project like this, or the technology was looked at in these parts. And our role is just to, you know, work with industry, work with harvesters, work with the innovators, the companies involved, to test this with the harvesters here in this region. And we've done a number of tests related to institutional testing here, you know, testing the technology in the flume tank here at Marine Institute to, you know, determine its functionality, looking at, because it was a development component to it as well, looking at, you know, if there's challenges or changes, you know, working with the innovators to make those changes. Then we went to the field and then have embarked with probably 10 to 12 different harvesters and their crews on their vessels with the technology, simulating what they would normally do in the crab industry, setting their pots, deploying them and pulling them back and attaching these devices and seeing, how that works. I guess some of the interesting and the advice we got back from harvesters, as you would imagine, has been invaluable for the innovators and for us heading up the project, because I think this originally, you know, came about in the Maritimes, where there was crab lobster trawls that were being used, and not at a really large depth comparatively to what we do here with the crab industry. And in those regions in the Maritime, you know, the thought was, if you had rope on command gear and certain areas were closed because of right whale, if you had rope on command gear, which was ropeless gear, which sits at the bottom until you're ready to pull it or to retrieve it, you could continue to fish. When we came here in this environment with the depth of water that's required to set crab gear, at various distance from shore, whether you're looking at a 40-foot or a 60-foot vessel. Also, you know, the currents, the swells, the wind, the North Atlantic, all were very interesting elements that that we adjusted going forward. So our project is, is in its second year. We're scheduled to have a report by March 31st of 2023. And again, you know, it's important to understand this is technology in development, and it's not unique to here or Atlantic Canada. I mean, along the eastern seaboard of the U.S., there's a lot of work being done. There's a lot of companies engaged in this activity. And from an export point of view, you know, like most certifications or standards for fish that are harvested around the world, it's a sustainability issue. So with this technology, it demonstrates that, you know, Canada's engaged, DFO is engaged, the industry is engaged, looking at, you know, alternate activity or alternate technology for the future that can certainly support sustainability. So, so that's where we're to with our current project.
Now, we don't have a whole lot of time left because we've been talking about so many other things, but I understand that CCFI is going to be involved once again in the Laurentic Forum. When is it, and what will you be doing there?
Yeah, so the Laurentic Forum is coming up again. I mean, that's a partnership between Newfoundland and Labrador, Ireland, Norway, and Iceland. And again, it's about, you know, supporting economic development in coastal communities and rural regions, both from a tourism perspective, which is one of the topics this year, as well as the blue economy. And CCFI participating again, I'll be moderating one of the day's session. And I mentioned before, you know, the seaweed and some of the projects we're doing here. That was a great session we had on a prior Laurentic Forum session we had. And if you're interested in participating, you can go to laurenticforum.com. You can sign up virtually, and it's free. And you participate in a part of it or the two-day events, whatever you would like to engage with, either from an industry perspective or just those that are interested in it. And it's coming up on November 29th and the 30th. So, again, certainly encourage anybody to have any interest to certainly sign up. And there will be the first day will be related to topics related to tourism, and the second day will be related to topics related to the fishery or the blue economy, I should say. And certainly topics there are looking at, development strategies related to seaweed. There's value added in fish utilization. And we'll hear from folks from Norway, Iceland, and Ireland as well. As well, we'd have a speaker from the Marine Institute that will speak to utilization of fish products as well. So it should be a great session, and certainly encourage anybody to go in online and be a part of it.
Is it all virtual or?
No, it's not. No, there's. I will be attending in person in Donegal, but you know, because of the response we had from earlier sessions, I think most now look at the fact that hybrid allows the maximum participation, and certainly allows greater input from various regions of these jurisdictions I spoke about.
We've got a little over a minute left. Any final thoughts?
No, thank you, Linda, for the opportunity. I mean, an opportunity like this, I think, allows to continue the discussion on some of the issues that are important to the fishery. I think there was a statistic given at the SEAL Summit that the fish and seafood sector in Canada supports about an $8 billion industry. So it is quite large. I don't know, at times we give it the focus it needs to be, but this allows that reset and focus on an industry that's so important, not only to commercially to our communities and regions, but from a food supply, from a global food supply, and from how we ensure that supply is sustainable and how we maximize the opportunities from it. So thank you to VOCM and for your interest in the topic.
Keith Hutchings, once again, thanks very much, and enjoy Ireland.
Thanks very much, Linda. Have a good day.
Same to you. And we'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned for that. We're going to hear more about the oceans with Oceana Canada. Stay tuned for that, and thanks for listening, everyone.